Hi, and welcome to the FrankMurphy.com podcast. We're talking college basketball today as the Final Four is upon us this weekend. And our guest today is Michael Litos, who is the author of Cinderella, the new book about, well, George Mason University's great season and all of the CAA season 2 years ago. What's the full title of the book?
Oh, it's Cinderella, Inside the Rise of Mid-Major College Basketball.
Now, obviously, mid-majors had a great year 2 years ago with George Mason and some other schools from, was it the Midwest?
Yes, the Missouri Valley Conference had Wichita State and Bradley both go to the Sweet 16.
All in the same year. Now,
right.
In the past two seasons since then, how have the mid-majors compared?
Well, you certainly haven't seen the protracted run like we saw from George Mason and those two Valley teams. Of course, Davidson this year was a lot of fun for everybody and jumping aboard that bandwagon.
They made it, what, to the Elite Eight?
And they made it to the Elite Eight, and you know, we're 1 3-pointer away from beating Kansas last week to get back to the Final Four. But, you know, I think what you're seeing from that is better seeds for the mid-majors. You know, we saw Butler this year was a 7, and everybody was upset about that. And instead of seeing the 12s, 13s, and 14s, you're seeing the 8, 9, 10, 11 seeds mm-hmm. for a lot of the quality mid-major programs. And that's where I think the success is bearing itself out.
Well, one of the things that comes out in your book, Cinderella, is that really the only way traditionally for mid-major teams to get into the tournament has been to win their championship game. You know, and they don't get a lot of at-large bids. How is that going to change over time? Is it going to, or the major conference is always going to hog up all the at-large bids?
Well, yeah, and at the end of the day, this is a television show, really. It's not a basketball tournament, and you know, just like any television show, you want the best ratings, and therefore you want the most attractive matchups. So nobody's under any other impression than the North Carolinas, the Kansases, a lot of the major conference schools. It's who they want to see in this tournament. Mm-hmm. However, you're seeing now they can't turn a blind eye to the success of the mid-majors that they're having on the court and the impact they're making really for the ratings in the early rounds. You know, people get behind a Davidson team. They get behind the George Masons.
Okay, everybody in America became a George Mason fan for that 1 year, and I had to convince people that I was George Mason before George Mason was cool, you know,
exactly.
Because I'm an alumni. I was going to basketball games, you know, in the field house before the Patriot Center opened.
Yeah, it's something that, you know, there are mid-major fans all over the country that are very proud of, you know, their schools and their basketball programs. I came from a mid-major school myself, which was actually the genesis for the book. I wanted to tell the story. It's a great thing, and you're seeing a lot more people come out of the woodwork these days.
What school did you go to?
I was a VCU guy.
Oh, all right, down there in Richmond.
Down in Richmond, yes. Yeah. So certainly a lot of interesting battles with George Mason.
Now, I've noticed a couple of things about the CAA. It's a different CAA than it was when I was in school, obviously, and even just in the course of the past couple of years, I've noticed all these teams that I don't remember being in the conference before. What happened to the old teams that used to be in the CAA, and where did these new ones come from?
Well, college basketball, like everything else, is an industry. So, you know, some teams decided they were better off in other conferences, the University of Richmond, American, these kinds of teams, and the CAA, in order to be viable and to survive, needed to add teams, and their strategy was, let's go into the big cities so that we can make an imprint and a footprint in those cities. So they added Northeastern from Boston. They added Hofstra from New York. You know, went down to Atlanta and added a Georgia State to round out the conference to 12 teams and also protect their automatic bid. You have to have 6 teams in your conference to qualify for the automatic bid.
So is there a chance, then, that the CAA can drop the mid and just become a major?
Well, this is America, so I think we just kind of have the knack and the desire to want to quantify everything. So there's going to be something that's not quite major status. I draw the line at the top 6 major conferences and the 2 conferences that were set up for television, the Conference USA and the Mountain West Conference, and that was all about money. So when you drop the money hammer on it, there's going to be that second tier, and the CAA is always going to be in it, whether we call it mid-major, sub-major, whatever, it's going to be there.
Well, what about then a school like George Mason, because that's the one obviously I care about, could they ever move out of the CAA into a major conference?
Well, they certainly could, and it's going to take a lot of financial investment. It's going to be very difficult not having a football team. That's the big driver of revenue for a lot of these schools.
Oh, okay.
But you could make that, you know, that argument.
I noticed that I didn't realize the CAA even had football until this year, I guess, they started it.
It was. It was this past year they absorbed the Atlantic 10. A lot of the CAA schools were playing football under the A-10 banner, and okay. Tom Yeager, the commissioner,
Your one school can be in more than one conference for different sports?
For different sports, exactly. It depends on the sports that they, that they underwrite.
Because all of a sudden Villanova is in the CAA, and I'm thinking, well, wait, why can't we get their basketball team in the CAA? That'll help.
Right, yeah. That would certainly help the CAA people. They'd love it. I don't know if the people pulling the purse strings at Villanova would love it. The Big East money is awfully good.
All right, so that would take a lot. So basically, George Mason is set where they're going to set, and that affects, of course, the decision of Jim Larrañaga. Is he going to stay or is he going to go? When I talked to you yesterday, 24 hours ago, to get this interview set up, you told me that Larrañaga had some interest from other schools. And for the past 24 hours, I've been kind of, antsy about this, kind of anxious about this.
Yeah, Providence did a very interesting thing that you don't see in college athletics, and they admitted that they went after Jim Larrañaga. They went after him hard, and he ultimately turned them down. You don't see a university red-faced like that very much anymore. But, yeah, the flirtation was there.
What would have been the appeal for Larrañaga to go to Providence?
Well, you're coaching at your alma mater. He started there as a player 30 years ago.
Okay.
And, to coach in the Big East against the Georgetowns and Syracuse every day is a little different than the Drexels and Georgia States.
I see what you're saying. But he's got a nice house in a nice neighborhood.
He's got
a good job.
If you're going to knock down $400,000, $500,000 a year and be able to live in a very comfortable place at a place where you can win basketball games, there's a lot of allure to that. I'd take that.
Sure. We're talking with Michael Litos, who's the author of Cinderella, Inside the Rise of Mid-Major College Basketball, here on the FrankMurphy.com podcast. When the tournament started, I was watching ESPN. They were talking about the brackets and stuff like this. One guy got on there and said that, especially for the mid-majors, and maybe even for everybody, they should flip it around. Instead of winning the tournament to get into the NCAA tournament, in other words, winning your CAA tournament or your SEC tournament or whatever as your automatic bid, it should be the regular season champion should get the automatic bid, and then the you can play your way into the big dance and get maybe an NCAA and an at-large bid there. Is that right? Do I understand that correctly?
Yeah, no, you're exactly right, because a lot of times you're seeing maybe a third or fourth place mid-major school have a hot 3 or 4 days and win their conference tournament. That actually happened this year in the CAA with George Mason. They won the tournament, and they were the 3 seed. And VCU, who was about 25-7 or maybe 25-6.
I guess we're going to go there, Mr. VCU alumni. Okay.
Yeah, we're going to have to go there. But they won the regular season by 3 games. People thought they were the best team in the conference, but they didn't get it done in the conference tournament. I think you're going to hear that every year, but you've got to have a real reason for that conference tournament.
Happened then is if this Doug Gottlieb on ESPN, if what he had suggested would have happened, VCU, having won the regular season, would have gone to the NCAA tournament.
Correct.
And then George Mason, having won the CAA tournament, could have gotten either an at-large bid or maybe an NIT bid for winning the tournament.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think they clearly played themselves into the NIT had they not gone to the NCAA. But, they would have had a chance to get 3 or 4 more games to prove themselves at-large worthy.
They showed, I don't know if you saw this, but when George Mason did play their one game, their one and done, against Notre Dame, it was on CBS beforehand. They showed Larrañaga's speech before the game, where he took a piece of paper with a leprechaun on it and said, "We're going to be magicians and make the leprechaun disappear." That even made it onto the Best Week Ever blog, which is a VH1 show. I guess they were poking a little fun at Larrañaga's enthusiasm, because that's the kind of guy he is.
Well, it is. He, back during their Final Four run, he said that, the George Mason colors, the green and gold, they were the color of kryptonite, and North Carolina was Superman. And
yeah.
He was quoting Confucius and William Jennings Bryan. They're playing baseball at basketball practice. He's a corny guy, but don't let that fool you. He's about as smart as they come.
Again, talking about mid-major college basketball, obviously my slant is toward the George Mason Patriots, because they were my team. It was a big deal for me to see. I don't know if you go back as far as Carlos Yates. He was the star player when I was in school. That was a long time ago.
It's amazing how quickly those years go by. Yeah, I've been following the CAA, back since some of the Richmond teams in the late 80s, early 90s.
Well, I'll tell you, it was called the ECAC or something like that when I was the... Or some other had some other name. It wasn't even called.
It was the ECAC, and it was broken up into the North and South. That was the early 80s. You got me beat for age.
Sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have admitted to that. Well, Michael, your book has got a real lot of detail in there and takes people through that great season, that run, the 2006 tournament, really game by game, practically, from all the teams, not just George Mason, but all the teams inside the CAA. Yeah. But it applies to everywhere in the country, right?
Well, it does, and that was what I wanted to do when I set out to do the book, was use a season in the CAA to illuminate the issues of mid-majors, just to kind of give it a story to go along with it. And, you know, Lord willing, Larrinaga and George Mason was very happy to oblige.
Well, terrific. I enjoyed talking with you very much, Michael. I appreciate your time with us as our premier guest on the Frank Murphy Podcast.
Well, Frank, thank you. I appreciate your time.
The book again, Cinderella Inside the Rise of Mid-Major College Basketball. Look over there to the left somewhere and you'll see a link you can click on. Michael Litos, we appreciate your time with us. Thanks a lot.
Oh, anytime, Frank.
This is FrankMurphy.com.